My name's Andy. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank Billy for asking me to come speak tonight. And I know he's not here today. I was joking with Sam before the meeting. Since he's out of town, I thought we should have a impromptu home group meeting and just change the format on him. So when he came back, a little baffled. My name's Andy. My sobriety date is March 21st, 2007. My home group is the Common Solution Group in Charlottesville, Virginia. We meet on Thursday nights at 7:30. So if you guys are ever coming through town, please stop by. We'd love to see you. You know, Billy asked me to do this a number of weeks back, and I said sure, and didn't really think about it. You know, and I was thinking the other day that, you know, this isn't what I like would normally want to do, is to get up in front of a lot of people and talk, you know. But I know now that when somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous asks me to do anything, you know, the answer for me today has to be yes. So I told Billy, sure. And, you know, I shouldn't think about it. I try not to think about what I'm going to want to prepare anything. I just kind of want to share my experience. And, you know, something happened the past couple of days around the house, and you know, stuff happens every now and then, and I think I had just been coming up short a little bit around the house, and I think some probably relate to that, some of us, and I got this idea in my head. I'm like, how am I going to go talk to these people, you know, about spiritual recovery, you know, and I'm here cutting people off, being short with people, being rude. You know, and I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, you know, I'm not even qualified to do this. And then I was talking to my sponsor about, you know, stuff that was going on, and he said something to me. He's like, yeah, I know, acting better than we feel, it's not always fun, is it? And I was like, no, sponsor, it's not. You're right about that. And I was kind of thinking, I realized, you know what, everything I hear people say, my sponsor and a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they talk about doing the things we do here, is that it's progress, not perfection. And I thought a lot about, you know, what really attracted me originally to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was people's honest stories and their honest experience about, you know, how they drank, how they felt when they drank, when they didn't drink, and their actions, things they've done. You know, when someone shares with you these things that have been secrets in their lives, you know, that they thought they could never tell anyone, and they're able to share that with you, you know, to help you out, you know, it's just an amazing thing. And I was thinking, I was like, you know what? Coming up short, it qualifies me to be here. You know, it's not like it disqualifies. I mean, this is exactly where I need to be today, tonight. I need to be getting in the car and putting a tie on and getting up here and doing what I told Billy I was going to do. So, you know, Sam said I should just share a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. So, you know, I'll just try to summarize up what it was like for me, you know, from the beginning. You know, I grew up in a family. We weren't rich, we weren't poor. I never really, like, felt like I didn't get enough love or anything. I just felt like I had what I needed. But I can't tell you one thing, and I've heard a lot of people say it from the podium, is that they feel like sometimes like they have trouble being a part of. You know, they feel isolated, they feel alone, they don't fit in. You know, it's confusing for me. I always was really good at being like a chameleon and adapting to situations, and I could work pretty hard at getting people to like me, and a lot of times I could be successful. You know, but as a result, I was focusing so much on myself and these actions. You know, if it's dressing a certain way, or if it's you know, lying about my past or anything, so that somebody will like me, I end up isolating myself even more. I keep reinforcing these differences between me and the people around me. So I really identified with that when people shared that kind of thing. As far as drinking goes, you know, I drank a little bit in high school, and really the only reason I did was because it was really the cool and, like, not legal thing to do, you know. It was like what you'd sneak out with your buddies and do, and it was like a way to be bad, and it was fun, and that's why I did it. And, you know, it wasn't really a big deal. Didn't really get in much trouble related to drinking. Ended up going to school down the road here, and you know, once I got away from the sight of, you know, mom and dad, and, you know, their hand over me, I was like, well, this is cool. I can really do whatever I want, you know. And so drinking kind of took a different turn at that point. And I just started drinking a lot more frequently and eventually, you know, every day. So things started happening in my life, consequences related to really all that drinking. And, you know, it seemed like whatever happened to me, it's like at the last second I got away with it. Or for some reason that consequence wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. You know, some examples I can have. I've been pulled over and I counted 5 distinct times where I was hammered. And I never got a DUI. I got pulled over down the road here on 29. You know, 12-pack, most of them empty at that point. Next to me, pulled a jacket over it. And, you know, nothing happened. I got a speeding ticket. So when those kind of things would happen, they'd scare me at the moment. I'm like, oh, this is the end. I'm going to get a DUI. And, but something would happen. I'd say, well, you know, it's not that bad. I'm fine. I got another speeding ticket. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. I just need to drive slower. And, so also other consequences. I ended up on a spring break trip doing crazy stuff, borrowing a Gator 4x6 from Vanderbilt University and driving it through the streets, and ended up getting arrested. And they said because of the value of this vehicle, it made this a felony offense. And then you would get thrown in jail in Nashville. That was another one of those situations where I tell you what, in a split second, everything changes. And you're like, well, I really need to get a hold of this stuff. Something's out of control. My life has just changed. It's taken an abrupt turn. And, you know, I might need to look at this drinking thing. But, you know, a series of events happened. Some members of my family knew some people that lived in Nashville, and they knew the right lawyers, and some things, some strings got pulled, and I got out of there with some community service. So it's another one of those things where it was kind of a rough drive home, but business as usual after a week, maybe feeling a little bit better, getting some food in me. So a big thing happened to me is I like to have fun a lot, like I'm saying. I like to drink a lot, and this was in school, and going to class kind of slipped away, and I didn't think I really needed to go to class as much as the university might have wanted me to. So they sent me a note, and they said, you know, Mr. L, we don't want you, we don't think you need to be attending next year. You know, take some time off. Of course, I'm injustice. You know, I feel wronged, and they just don't understand. And I even think I wrote like a letter explaining my situation, talking about some ex-girlfriend that I had, and I was depressed, and all these things that happened to me. And they just said, no, you know, that's our rule, and we can talk about it in 12 months. So what that meant is that meant I had to go home and live with my folks for a while. Now, my parents, I was the youngest of three. And at that point in their lives, they had really moved on from raising kids, right? They had sent their last one to college. It was over. And they were ready to move on with their life. They had a lot of things to do, whatever they wanted to do. And I wasn't part of that plan, rightly so. But, you know, I just expected, all right, I'm back home. And this is my home, and I'm just going to be a part of your life. And I really took advantage of them during that time. I also had some people, you know, put their neck out for me. My sister got me a job working at the company that she worked at. And it was downtown in D.C. And it was really above probably what I should have been doing at the time, considering what I'd gone through and my qualifications. But, you know, she put her neck out on the line for me. And I tell you what, the whole time I'm there, now I can look back on that and I can see, man, look what these people were doing for me, you know. And then I didn't see any of it. And instead, I just was stuck in this idea that everybody had screwed me over. You know, this idea that I should still be at school having fun with all those people that I know that are still down there having fun. And I shouldn't have to go to this stupid job. And I don't want to live with my parents, you know, all this crap. And really started drinking a lot more by myself during that time. And started doing things like, you know, every day on the way home from work, I'd stop at this little bar, and I thought it was so cool because there's always the same, like, 4 people on these stools in this bar. And every day I'd go back in there, and it'd be the same 4 folks, and they're all very different. But they're always, one thing is their butt was always on that chair. And so it was so cool. I kind of fell into this thing, and I'd stop on the way home from the train station and go in. And someday I think I'm going to see some of those people in a meeting. But I didn't realize today, then, that, you know, that this whole drinking thing had really changed. I had been woken awake, and I remember at the home in my house with like one of these like stadium cups just full of Evan Williams bourbon, you know, where I had just passed out with this cup next to me. And of course the family's pretty alarmed at that point. They don't understand what's going on. They've given everything to me. You know, what's the problem here? And I remember going into work at the job that my sister secured for me, so hungover that all I can do is just think about how can I get to sleep. And we worked at this office building that was brand new downtown, and they were slowly phasing different departments into it. So there were floors of empty cubicles just waiting for new departments to move in. So what I'd do is I'd get up there, and as soon as like a door would shut or whatever, I would just kind of scamper off and sneak off and find some distant cubicle, lay down under the desk and just sleep. And I had the whole thing fixed. You know, I thought I was just smarter than everybody. Never once, I think, during that whole time did I realize what stress I was probably putting my sister through, you know, because of the length she had gone to get this for me. Anyway, I got through that period, and eventually, school let me back in. I came back down, and I finished up. And something about getting up to a train stop at 8 a.m. made it a little easier, at least, to get to class. And so I was able to do that, and I finished, and I got my degree. And I was dating this woman, and we moved out to a log cabin out in the country. She still worked near town, and I was looking for a job. So, it was out in the middle of nowhere, and this thing was a hole in the wall, and 300 years old, and there was a staircase where you could go up from the bottom to the top, and in the morning you could see the beams of light, like, coming through, you know, in the dust. I thought it was so cool. And what that meant was that it was an opportunity really to drink exactly how I wanted to drink at that point. You know, I was alone, I had some peace, some solitude. What it also meant was that I there's like this 30-minute commute, you know, if I was coming back from school, or if after that, once I got a job, coming home from work, you know. And at that point, I don't think I could be alone with myself in the car for whatever reason, just by myself alone without drinking. And so what I ended up doing was, after I got this job in town, lived out in a half hour. On the way home from work, every day I'd stop by the same gas station, and I'd get two 22s, and I'd just put them between my legs, and I would just slowly drink them, you know, all the way home, and time it just so I was done getting home, you know, pitching bottles out the window, taking the dirt roads home so that I was, like, avoiding things. I thought that was crafty, too. And, eventually that changed into 40s, so it was like two 40s on the way home. And, things started happening where I got opportunities in my work to travel. Sometimes I go up to D.C. for the day, and I would have to drive home, right? And so, like, I'm getting on 66, headed to Charlottesville. So I got, like, 2 hours ahead of me. So I would always stop in Manassas and get, you know, maybe a 12-pack or maybe, you know, long necks or something and just start drinking. And so, and then I get about halfway home, and I would always need to get more beer. And so I just get more beer. And then by the time I got home, what's happened is my stomach's getting so full of beer, I actually have to throw up. I remember pulling over and just throwing up foam, you know, and going and getting, like, gum and mints and stuff so that I could, when I got home and I'd see my wife, she wouldn't know what's going on, you know. Also did that trick, too, where you, I was always hiding my drinking, you know, from her, but I did that trick where you drink it a lot, and then you have to see your wife or someone who you're hiding your drinking from. Then you open the first beer of some fresh pack and start drinking, so she thinks, oh, well, that's his first beer. That's the alcohol I smell. So I had that gig going on for a long time. So things just started happening. Things got worse and worse. I really started falling into this thing where on more and more nights, and it got to be close to every night, as I would end up, you know, my wife would be ready to go to bed, and at this point, I think she's pretty worried about me. And she would just ask me, you know, let's go to bed. You know, all she wants to do is just to know that I'm laying down next to her, asleep and done. And I would always have some excuse, like, I joke with my friends, I'm always saying that it was like some badminton game on ESPN 8 or something that I had to stay up for. You know, it's really important for the draft order next season. You wouldn't understand or something. And I tell her, you know, I won't be much longer. And I just remember sitting on the couch and I'd look down the hallway and she'd close the door and she'd go in and read. And I'd see a little light under the door kind of flowering out into the hallway. So I'd watch TV and every 2 seconds I'd just look and I'd look and I'd look. And eventually the light would go off and I know she was asleep. And I could just be like, and I'd get up and I'd go to the refrigerator and I'd just get those bottles and I'd spread them out in my fingers so they wouldn't clink. And I'd walk over and elbow my way out the door so I don't make any noise, and I'd go sit on the porch and I just would drink. And I mean, I'm not doing anything, I'm not listening to music, I'm just drinking to oblivion, just complete oblivion. And a lot of times the oblivion is like in a blackout, I don't even know, but there are some times where I'm still conscious and I can experience oblivion when my brain doesn't know what anything is anymore. And that's where I was getting. I was just, and I hadn't, there wasn't something I could blame or anybody that I could, I couldn't say, oh, you know, this specific thing happened to me and I'm going to show them. I don't know. I just did. I just drank like that. And, you know, so you can imagine it put a toll on the relationship and a lot of shame in there. And I didn't really understand why I was doing it, you know, because I loved my wife and I love my family and I love these people. And I don't want to hurt them, you know. And when I woke up and you black out, I don't even ever remember going to bed lots of nights. And I wake up and initially it's like, oh, good morning. And then I think, oh, I don't remember the last couple hours of last night. And then it's all the shame starts hitting me like, oh my God, what did I do? You know, what did I say? Did I hurt anybody? What happened? And it's just complete shame. And then it's like, I did it again. You know, I did it again. And I just go through this whole shame thing. And I'm like, you know what? I mean it this time. You know, I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm done. And I would swear, and I guess at that point I'm swearing to God. You know, I don't think I had like a conscious contact with God at that point, but I was saying that to somebody, you know, that I mean it. I am not going to do this anymore. And I was probably as honest as I got back then, and I really meant those things. And but what would happen is, you know, I'd go and I actually worked at home during those. I still do. I worked at home, and which made a lot of, I could drink at home easier, but. You know, I'd start working, and eventually, maybe around noon or something, my whole perspective had changed. Where I was this completely desperate person, convinced I can't hurt these people anymore. The last thing I want to do is drink. Something had changed in me. I wasn't really thinking about it. I don't know, about two or three, all I'm doing is thinking about, can I hold on for another couple of hours? Or maybe it's just an hour until I can start drinking again and figure out some way where I can mask this, maybe figure it out this time so she doesn't realize what I'm doing. And it was just a cycle like that, and it was ugly and it was awful. And what happened to me was she had had enough and she left. And I was like, I don't like that. And so I said, I remember I called her and I told her I'm going to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And my thinking was that that would convince her that I'm serious this time. I don't think I was serious. But I told her that I was doing that and that, you know, maybe we could pump the brakes a little bit on this whole thing. And so I went to this meeting and I ended up going to a couple more meetings. And I met some guys in those meetings, and something piqued my interest. There was something that they were saying that, like, I could hear and I could listen to. And one of those guys, I kind of cornered him after this meeting one time, and I was like, I wanted to tell him what's going on with me. I want to explain my situation and what I've been through. And so I started recounting the story that you all just suffered, that I just told you, about, you know, my relationship, and that, you know, I don't know if she's going to come back, man. And I'm like, I don't know. I put it at 50-50. I don't know, and I think I'm probably pulled some tears up, and I probably had them going, and I had this guy, and I was looking, and I remember I looked up at him, and I was like, I just don't know if she's coming back. And he looked at me, and he goes, well, Alcoholics Anonymous isn't marriage counseling. And he goes, you know, your wife might come back, or she might not. He's like, but, you know, what we do here is we get sober, and then we carry the message to alcoholics that still suffer. You know, we're helpful to other alcoholics. And I mean, I wanted to knock that guy in the face. I was like, you don't understand me at all. You know, that's what I'm thinking. Like, you don't get it. And what's amazing is that guy understood me more than anybody. You know, he had been right where I was. And he had been to that point where it was like, all this awful stuff is happening to me. You know, it's like, and he saw right through it. And I am so grateful that there are people, you all out there in Alcoholics Anonymous, that can just give me the straight story, you know. So, of course, I was pretty irritated, but you know what? I kept coming back to meetings because I had an ulterior motive. I wanted to save my relationship. And well, I started doing these things, and what happened is I really identified as an alcoholic here. And that was the biggest thing for me. The challenge for me coming in was that I was too young, and in the back of my mind, there was a lot more fun out there that I should have, right? Every time I had gone for fun, I had burned it up quick, and I'd ended up drinking alone on my porch in the dark. But in my mind, I'm still like, I'm way too young for this, man. I got some good mileage left in me. So that was an issue, you know. But tell you what, what was amazing to me is that people sharing their experience with me. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, the magic of it was that some person, when they would talk to me, they would just share their experience. This is what happened to me. It was never like a debating society where they were trying to prove their point. You know, growing up, people who loved me and saw me go through bad things in my life, like my family or my wife, they wanted the best for me, and they would try to convince me of the, you know, the right way to do things. And that never worked for me. You know, no thank you, I know better. Well, the neat thing about Alcoholics Anonymous in my experience was it was just people that all they did is said, hey, this is my experience, okay? I was like you. You know, I drank like this. I tried to put the plug in the jug, you know, where I just don't drink for a couple weeks and eventually something goes off and I have to go and drink again. And they talked about that kind of insanity and they just shared their experience with me and I really identified, you know. Especially identify with that part that I just mentioned, right, about, and I had tried this too in my life, of when things got really bad, say, okay, I mean it this time, I'm not going to drink. And I could do it for a few days. And I could put the plug in the jug and last, you know, maybe even a week. But at some point, some feelings inside me get to such, some perspective I have on the world is that I drink seems like all right, like that might be the way to go. And always goes back there for me. Now, anyone that is sane and can understand logically what alcohol does to me, which I understood logically, you know, wouldn't have that problem. But logic failed me, you know. So I identified as an alcoholic in here. And that kept me coming back to meetings. And I heard a lot of the things that you all say. And it's like, get a sponsor and get a home group. And I guess I was desperate enough, and I really believed what you guys were saying, that I did that. So I asked this guy to be my sponsor. I actually asked the guy that was such a jerk to me. And it was so, my ego is still really big, but it was really big then, and like, it was big. And so I remember thinking before I went up to him that I'm going to make this guy's day. I'm going to ask him to be my sponsor. Because I'm like the young guy in AA, and I'm going to give him a shot at this guy. And I asked him, and he said, well, why don't you meet me on this day, and then we'll talk about it. And I'm thinking, okay. So that's what we did, and I realize now I've talked about it, you know, many times later, and he's just saying, well, first of all, I want to know if this person's able to take direction. You know, because that's what we do here is we offer suggestions. We provide direction and then for people to take. And so that's what he did. He set up a time and a place for me to meet him, and you know what? I met him. And then so he laid out some requirements for me. He said, you know, there are no rules here, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you my experience. Okay? And he's going to say, I'm not going to ask you to do anything that I don't do myself. And if you're willing to do these things, then great. You know what? I'll sponsor you. And if not, no hard feelings, you know. You don't have this. I'm not telling you have to do this stuff. And so he said I needed to get to 4 meetings a week, and I needed to have 2 committed meetings. And he explained that as meetings that no matter what, every week I was at that same meeting. I wasn't just trying to like catch meetings, you know, where I could to get to my magic number of 4. And he also told me that, you know, I had to be a member of a home group, which I was at that point. I need to get a job in that home group. And so I did, and just started from there. And I'm not saying that it was easy, because it wasn't. You know, I do not like taking direction, okay? Today, I can tell you that that's probably my favorite thing to do. I've realized at this point is if I just have clear direction, all the pressure is off me. You know what, like being up here talking, it makes me nervous, you know what I mean? But what makes it a lot simpler is the fact that all I'm here to do is to share my experience. There's no right or wrong answers. I have to guess and get something right. All I'm doing is sharing my experience, and I know what that is. So taking direction today, you know, that's just, it's a great thing for me. But, you know, there were some little things that I thought that went a little far. First of all, I didn't understand why making coffee had anything to do with sobriety. Like, seriously. And another thing is, I remember at one of my home group meetings one time, he came in. My sponsor kind of pulled me aside, and he's like, listen. He's like, you're not going to come to your home group meeting anymore dressed like this. He's like, you're going to dress respectful to your home group meeting. And I mean, it was like that slap in the face from before, I felt. Because I'm looking at him up and down, like, and I'm like, this bathing suit costs more than your whole thing you've got going on here. And but you know, it's little things like that, and I know what was going on. The next home group I was at, I was dressed more appropriately as the bottom line. You know, I was willing to make those changes. And I've heard him, my sponsor talk about it, I heard his sponsor talk about it too, about this turning your will over, and how, you know, when I came in, I certainly identified with you folks, this ego thing of like, I'm in control and I know what's best. And it's really hard for me to do that. You know, and this is even before I'm getting to that point where I'm going to turn my will over to God. First thing I had to do was turn my will over to a sponsor. Okay, I had to put myself in a position where I was teachable. And I tell you what, that was so painful at first to do that. And looking back on it now, I'm like, that is so silly. Like, it's so hard for me to put on something dry, you know? It's so hard for me to make coffee. Like, it's ridiculous. When what he's saying is, if you just do these simple things, you know, that's all I did, and look where I am. So we proceeded from there. And in short order, we kind of got into the steps here in the big book. And the way that we did that was that I just sat down. Usually it was just in his car, my sponsor's car, sitting across from him. I'd read a paragraph, he'd read a paragraph, you know, talk about ego deflation, having this man read to me, right? And that's just the way we did it. And I thought I knew everything, and I thought I could read over this stuff and get it. And I went to college, buddy. You know, I get this is, what's the deal here? I tell you something, I didn't get it. We'd read over these things, and then he'd point stuff out to me that I just had totally missed. That's just the way it was for me. But we started working these steps. Now, I also, you know, I feel like the way I'm telling this is that I'm just like came in here totally willing, and it just said yes at all these hurdles. But one thing that really bugged me was when I saw the word God on the wall. Okay, now, I know everybody comes in here from different backgrounds, and we're all different, but for whatever reason, the point that I was at, I didn't want to see that, and I didn't think it had any place in your little program. You know, like, I could look at it, and I was like, yeah, this makes sense, what you guys are doing here. I could see how this would help, but you don't need this God stuff. And I remember working with my sponsor on that, and what was neat is, again, he did not argue with me. And he did not bang anything down my throat. What he did do was he kind of like these hurdles that I had put up in front of myself, he kind of just either moved them over or lowered them down a little bit. So for the God thing, he said, well, let me ask you this. He said, have you ever been sober this long in your life? And it was probably like between 4 and 6 months when we were talking about this. And I was like, no. And he's like, well, did you do that on your own? And I was like, no. He said, would you say that Alcoholics Anonymous helped you to do that? I was like, yes, I would. And he said, well, is Alcoholics Anonymous a power bigger than you? Yes, I get it. He said, well, listen, that's good enough for now. He's like, that's good enough for now. We're going to move forward. And I can share, you know, my experience on that and the relationship with a higher power is that, you know, I've had a spiritual experience like we talk about in the book, as a result of doing all the 12 steps, okay? And I have a relationship with God today that, and what's weird is coming in here, I never would have thought that was going to happen or that had any part of this. I didn't think so. Never would have guessed it. But all of that, the understanding of a higher power for me came as a result of being teachable and taking action here and walking through the steps. Man, the first time I really felt like I had a higher power in my life is when I was doing my first amends. And I remember sitting in the car before I was doing it, and every cell in my body saying, no, run, no, you don't want to do this. And I didn't. I did not want to do this. And I remember saying to myself, out loud or to my head, I don't know, but I said, it's in your hands. And I got out of the car, and I walked in. You know, and so a power greater than me helped me do that, and that was not my doing, you know what I mean? My best thinking, I right the wrongs of my past, I don't think so. So, got through the second step, and then we started moving, and started getting active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my sponsor always, he sums up the third step, he's saying, that's just a decision to go on with the rest of the steps. He's saying, that means you're just going to do the deal here. And you make a decision, and we're rolling. We did the fourth step out of the big book, and really what that showed me is that, you know, my problems were of my own making. I was the problem, okay? And it showed me that, well, you know, actually when I first came in here, I didn't think I had all these resentments. And a little bit of time without drinking, things clarified, and I realized that I did hate some people. But you know what's neat about that fourth step is it just shows me that all of these resentments I have, any kind of anxiety, any resentment towards another person, you know, that's a flaw in my thinking, how I'm looking at that situation. It's completely my doing. And it's based in a fear, a self-centered fear, you know, that I'm not going to get what I think I deserve, that I'm going to lose something I already have. You know, biggest thing for me that came out of that is that I am out of the fourth step, and talking it over with sponsoring the fifth step, is this idea that I'm terrified what other people think of me. Terrified. And it's very clear to see that in the fourth step. You know, when we look at when we did the columns out of the big book, it's, you know, that self-esteem. You know, and that was just there for everything. I acted poorly because I was afraid what someone was going to think of me. You know, I ripped into this guy. Because I was afraid people were going to think I was a loser. I had to show them that I knew best. Always these actions came out of fear. And that really was a big thing for me because it helped me understand this behavior a little bit. And what's interesting is, you know, that didn't fix anything. I was aware of it, but I, hadn't done anything yet. So, you know, then we started rolling. And started with this immense process. And, you know, when I came into AA the first time, which is the only time I said that. When I came in, that was the one thing I knew about the program, is the immense process. And I don't know if it's because of, you know, my name is Earl Show, or whatever, where the guy is listening, or from movies or whatever, but I knew about it. And so that's kind of something I always had in the back of my head, is that, like, I'm going to have to make these things right with some people. And I'm going to have to tell some secrets that I don't want to tell. And, you know, so I was a little nervous about that. But, you know, the first step there was, you know, getting through that was really the fifth step in airing that stuff out with another human being. I could clearly remember one thing in particular that happened and, when I was younger, where I basically screwed somebody over. And my actions affected this person, their family, financial ramifications, their reputation. And I lied about it. And it was something I carried. And I remember sitting at home, and I remember thinking, when this happened, I'm probably like in high school at the time, I remember thinking, I'm gonna lie about this, and I know it's gonna be awful, and I know I'm gonna feel terrible about it. But I made a conscious decision that I just never tell anyone else about that, and I went like that for a long time. And so that was the one thing on my inventory when I was talking to my sponsor. I was just, that was my thing, you know. I think everybody has a thing or a few things, and that was my thing. And for whatever reason, I was able to share that with them, you know. And what's so important there in that fifth step, too, is that in work with someone else, especially someone in Alcoholics Anonymous who's active in Alcoholics Anonymous, they made me realize I'm just an alcoholic, you know. These things that I've done that. Bob's done that. Jill's done that. These things, listen, you're in the right place, you know, and there's a way out. So a lot of these things that I had never really put down concretely on paper or shared with anybody, once I did, there's a lot of hope that was born out of that. So then we went and we were making the eight-step list. I was making my list, and I had a lot of names on there. And I'll tell you what, the sponsor came in very handy during that portion. And, you know, there were some names on there that I thought I owed amends to some people. And, you know, he took a Sharpie and was like, nope. Nope, not doing it, not doing it. And, you know, he points out that to me, and he still does, that the why we do this, you know, isn't for you to feel better, okay? The reason we're doing this is to right the harms that you've done other people, okay? Like, I look at this step, I mean, half the step where it's written, half of it is except when to do so would injure them or others. Like, they put that disclaimer in the step itself. You know, it's like, it's critical. And so what he did is he pointed out a couple names that were on my list. And in fact, it would cause more harm to those people. You know, I didn't need to stick my head back in the lives of some people because they had moved on. And really all that would serve would be so I could cross something else off my list. You know, complete disregard for their lives and what they're doing. Critical to work on that with the sponsor. But, you know, some really great things happened. I kind of had, like, three different types of amends, right? I had your financial amends, things that I had stolen and I needed to pay back, either businesses or, you know, actually, like, showing up at a business with a check, explaining what I had stolen and actually paying it back. Then I had your family and then, like, you know, friends, too. They kind of went a little different for me, but like I mentioned earlier too, that thing about really believing in a higher power and turning my will over to God. You know, I felt that in the ninth step. You know, it was really amazing what happened in the ninth step. I had kind of gone up to visit my parents for the weekend. I was going to make amends to my parents, and also gone over this with my sponsor ahead of time. He kind of made for me a little cheat sheet, okay? And it was like a numbered list of things to do. And he's like, don't take this into the amends with you. But please review. So it was, number one was call sponsor. Number two was pray. Number three was tell them how you've harmed them. Next, ask them if you've left anything out. Then it was ask them how you can make this right. Right, and then it was, I think, oh, no, it's ask them if you've left anything out, then shut up. then ask them how you can make this right, and then call sponsor. And, of course, I thought that was so ridiculous. I'm like, do you really need to write this out for me? You know, I'm like, come on. But when I'm sitting in the car, like, almost shaking about going in there, it was so nice to have clear directions. And I had directions. And what was really great is when I was in that amends, and specifically the amends with my mom, I was really glad that he had put on there, shut up. Because had he not, had I not read over that and gotten straight on that, I'm sure I would have been responding and I would have been trying to justify some behavior. So, you know, what happened there is he also told me, he's like, you know, this isn't an opportunity for us to just list everything you've ever done to your parents. So what you need to go in there and list those things so they know that you know what you're talking about, how you've harmed them, that you've really harmed them, you know. Tell them those things so they understand. And went in there and did that. And when I got to that part with my mother about, you know, have I left anything out, she added a few things. You know, and I kind of thought that was going to be on all the amends where people would be like, oh, no, you know, you're fine. But, you know, she had a few things. And I tell you what, in my head, I'm thinking, everything she mentioned, I'm thinking, oh, but you don't understand where I was coming from. You see the reason. Or I was thinking, well, that's not what I said, you know, or that wasn't me. That was, you know, all these thoughts are going through my head. But because my sponsor had gone over this with me so many times, I didn't say anything. And I sat there. And something amazing really happened because I'm sitting there across from her and I see on her face as she's saying these things, like the real hurt that I had caused her. And I realized, like, my entire life, I think I had always given her the yeah, but or something. And I had never let her just air her feelings. And what happened is, like, I looked at her and I didn't recognize her. She was a woman, and she was a human being who was, like, in pain, who I had harmed. I'd never seen that. You know, she went from being just this, like, mom entity to, like, one of God's kids, you know? And I was like, man. And really powerful. And it's all from shutting up. And so what we did, of course, we laid out, you know, how we can make this stuff right. And, you know, for that, really for her, she wanted to make sure she had a son back, and she wanted to make sure that she had someone who's part of the family. So the big thing for her was, you know, just call me every week. Let me know how things are going. And I said, sure, you bet. And that's what we did. And, you know, things went a little differently with my dad, and he was the other variety. He's like, ah, whatever. That stuff happened in the past. I'm just glad you're doing okay. You know, I was like, my kind of amends. And, yeah, but one thing was, which to him was, it kind of opened up this dialogue, and it was really nice. And we had a little discussion. He told me a little story about when he was a kid. And I don't know if his uncle, I guess it was my great uncle, I don't remember, but he said the only thing he knew about Alcoholics Anonymous is that he had this family member who had trouble with alcohol. And he said once a week, when he was a kid, he'd see these guys come over in a car, and they were dressed nice, and they'd pick him up, and they'd go, and he'd come like 3 hours later, he'd come back, and he'd stop drinking. It was so weird. It was like my dad, that was his experience with it, and it was just really neat for me to think about that. Like my parents aren't in recovery, and they don't have like alcohol problems and things like that. And it was just really neat to see a connection that you know, this thing's been, it's been in my family, but that Alcoholics Anonymous was working then, you know, and it can work for me now. And also, it's nice to know that my dad had a little idea of what it is we do here, so I thought it was kind of cool. And then, like I said, you know, paying the money back, that stuff was kind of fun. I remember paying some money back for some CDs I had stolen over a period of time from a large electronics chain. And, went in there with a check. And I talked to the store manager and I said, listen, I have stolen X, Y, and Z over this period of time, and I'm here, I'm here to make amends, for this. I want to make it right. And it was crazy. He was like, hold on a second. He's calling these security guys over. And he's like, he wants to know how I pulled it off. Like, he's like, how'd you do that? And I'm like, he's like, how much did you steal? And so I went through it with him, and it was cool. I got to build the ego back up a little bit. But, but the neat thing about that is it was clear that I was there making an amends as part of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, I think it's probably another good reason why I was clear on the actions I'm supposed to take. Because, like, when I do that kind of thing, I think I'm really representing Alcoholics Anonymous, too. And so I want to make sure I do that the right way. And I know if I'm coming up with the game plan on my own, it's probably not Alcoholics Anonymous' way to do it. And I'm kind of going in the order of the steps here, so I'll just keep rolling. With the 10th step and the daily inventory, I don't take a written inventory. I heard people talk about that. Sometimes they got checklists and stuff, and I don't do that. I've never done that. What I do is when retiring at night, I do, think about my day, and I do think where I've been short with people and whether or not I need to go back and make that right the next day. Another big part of this for me is just pausing when agitated or doubtful, and our literature says restraint of pen and tongue. For me, it's like restraint of email. I'm like, really? I really want to fire back quickly. And, then also in our book, it's power-driven arguments, And I still have that stuff fly up with me today where I'm in an argument with someone. Okay, and I'm there, and I can feel this like urge to be right and put somebody in their place, and I can feel, and it's this justified anger, right? And when I feel that stuff coming up, when I feel this thing of justification, I know I'm not justified. It's pretty much that simple. If I need to justify anything I'm saying or doing, I don't need to be doing it. So, pausing when agitated or doubtful, and then my prayer and meditation, for me, it's really something, I don't have like an, I wish I had like an hour to set aside in the morning and do it, but I don't do that. We have a child at home now, he just turned one, so usually when we wake up, there's a baby crying, and we're on it, we're rolling. Somebody's getting the milk, somebody's doing the boop. And that's just the way it is. And my prayer in the morning is just usually in the shower. And it's usually something like, God, please help me be useful today. Help me to be useful. And, my meditation consists of going over, before I get rolling with work or anything else like that, am I going to a meeting today? Who am I calling today? Like, what alcoholics am I calling? The stuff my sponsor laid out for me, go to these meetings, get a home group, get active in the home group, and call other alcoholics. He also wants me calling alcoholics every day. I still have to do that same stuff today. Nothing that's changed, since I got going here. So morning meditation for me is really just getting straight on all of those things that I need to be doing for Alcoholics Anonymous throughout the day. It's really been that simple for me, working with other alcoholics, I've had the opportunity to work with somebody, and it's been an amazing opportunity. The coolest thing about it is, it's like my sponsor said to me, I'm not going to ask you to do anything that I don't do. So if anyone ever asks you to sponsor them, when they ask me, I realize I got to make sure I'm doing all of these things, because if I'm going to ask somebody to do them, I got to make sure I'm doing them myself, walk in the walk. And the amazing thing is you get a call from somebody like that. And I always used to thank my sponsor. I was like, thank you so much. I couldn't believe the time that he would put in to sit with me in a car. He has a kid and family. And he would always just say, no, he's like, you're helping me more than I'm helping you. And he's like, the only thing you have to do is you just have to promise me that you'll be willing to do this with somebody else if they ask you. And I don't know if I believed what he was saying. You know, I thought maybe just that was the cool AA thing to say. But it's just really true, you know. I'm never as opened up to the world, ready to be useful and just available than after I've worked with somebody, you know, or talked to somebody or helped another alcoholic. I also want to talk a little bit about, you know, my experience with a home group. You know, it's been a big deal for me. Like I mentioned, we got a group down in Charlottesville, and you know, so cool. One of the things that our group does is we all hop in the car, almost all of us, we hop in the car once a week and we go to this meeting out of town. It's about an hour south of town. And it's a great meeting. But you know what? The best part of that whole experience is this car ride with all these knuckleheads going down and coming back. And, you know, we're joking around, having a good time, and we are talking about stuff that we've been through, talking about our experience, and the answers that everybody gives each other, it's always AA, you know, it's always that. And it's just this other example that I need just to be reminded, you know, about what I need to be doing here. And you know what, I don't want to ramble on, so with that I'm going to end it. Thank you very much for having me, I appreciate it. Yeah.